58. Mishnah Dalet. Pergelos. Chapter 3, Mishnah 4, according to the Council. Rabbi Shimon Omer. Rabbi Shimon says, Shloisha she'ochlu al shulchan echad. Three people that ate at one table. V'lo amru olav divrei Torah. They did not speak some Torah at the table. Ki'ilu ochlu mizidchei mesem. As if they have eaten offerings of the dead. Shenebar, Nepal shulchanos mal ukitzoy abali makom. Quotes the a verse from the prophet that the tables are full of vomit and filth without the omnipresent. Rough description. Mm-hmm. Right, pretty rough description. What it is really a metaphor for idol worship. Take a sip of page 550. It's a metaphor for idol worship. The offerings of the idols are called zivchei mesim, the offerings of the dead or to the dead, the gods that are lifeless. Three people that sat at the table and spoke Torah at the table. As if they ate from God's table. God is called the Makom, He is the place, because the world is in God. God's not in the world. He is the place. And we are in his place. This is the table before God. Now we mentioned this briefly this morning when we spoke about the altar. In the base of English, we speak about the korbanos. The Gemara says, Talmud says, nowadays we don't have a temple. We don't even have a temple service. Where do we make offerings? Where do we bring offerings? So the Gemara says, nowadays a person's table at home serves as his atonement, serves as his altar. That means if a person eats and you eat properly and you eat the right foods and you eat with the right attitude, so then your table becomes an offering. Your table becomes a mizbeach. If a person sees eating as an ends in and of itself, then he's really serving himself. The person, why is it that when you're at a table, you have to say some Torah at the table? Now, this is a mistake people make also. It doesn't mean you have to give a speech. It doesn't mean you have to give a drusha and put everybody to sleep. It doesn't say. What it means is that sometime at a meal, sometimes there should be something of substantial content discussed at the table. Why? Because what that becomes, that serves as evidence that the reason you're eating, do you eat to live, or do you live to eat? Right? Some people, you wake up in the morning thinking of what you're going to eat. Life is what I'm going to eat, and you discuss what you're going to eat, and at night you go to sleep. What did I eat? You talk about it in the bed. what am I going to eat? Now, look, I like eating as much as the next guy. That's part of something we do. It's the most basic human desire. It's a physical need. It's something we need to do. But there are ways. There are halachas on how we eat. There are halachas on how a person eats and how dignified. A couple of guys came in. A couple of guys came in for supper instead of eating yeshiva food. Of course, no self-respecting yeshiva guy is going to eat yeshiva food more than one night in a row. You got to go out and spend money on. There's a place in town where they have submarine sandwiches now. You can get yourself a pastrami. There's a place where you can buy yourself a pastrami submarine sandwich where you get pastrami, and if you get paid, they have different levels. So you get level one is pastrami, level two is pastrami and turkey, and level three pastrami, turkey, and roast beef. Right, I don't think, say 17 shekel, 28 shekel, or 39 shekel, and with fried onions and a few piece strips of cardboard or whatever else they put on there, to make it. And this guy walks in with this monstrosity and he eats it. Now, go ahead and enjoy your food. Nothing wrong with enjoying your food, but somehow I think instinctively, first you understand that to take something that looks like this, it looks like a weapon that's been developed by the U.S. military, right? And to open your mouth and kind of you almost look like you ever see a snake swallowing a rodent, and just you can even see the thing going down the snake, somehow to get your jaws open like an alligator, over how you negotiate this thing. So again, when I was 18, I was as bad as the worst of them, but here I'm watching these guys knock it down. I was getting indigestion watching them. And the guy just, went after it, took no prisoners. They said, boy, I should have bought another one. my goodness, yeah. I don't think we're all enjoying life. We're supposed to enjoy life. But there's a certain lack of, I told the guys, cut it in half. Just cut it in half. Eat the whole thing. Cut it in half. You don't have to eat the whole log. You know, cut it in half. You know, take two, make two sandwiches out of it. There are halachas and there are herets. When you eat, I've used falafel as an example. The Gemara talks about not picking up, not eating out of a piece of bread the size of a kebesa. Kebesa is difficult to know how big it is. But there's something undignified about any sort of piece of food that you got to hold in two hands. Right? You got to hold the falafel in two hands and figure out a way, you know, and half it ends up on your pants anyway. And you're like, and you're wiping off cream. You know, I have tried over the years, at least when I eat falafel, to eat half falafels. You know, a little more civil. You know, I think one of these things, you know, and they wrap, you know, take, it's like eating a stadium. You know, it just doesn't, and some of the fans fall out of the stands. You know, so the halacha is very sensitive to it. These are things that are almost common sense. In the Queen of England, they have rules. You know, how come you never see anybody at a royal court? When you know the Queen assembles the royal court and the ambassador from Australia and the Premier of New Zealand, you know, they're all with her. You know, I don't think anybody's eating it. Nobody's eating a submarine sandwich there. You know, they're all sitting there like this with their finger up in the air. They even have a rule: when the Queen stops eating, you stop eating. You know, there are rules to it. If they understand it, we understand it as well. You know, there's a certain halachic, and as I say, it's not even a halachic. It's not a prohibited usser mutter. It's their heritage, it's basic human dignity. So the first thing is the attitude towards food has to be, am I alive to eat? Or I'm eating to stay alive. Now God does us a chesed, God does a kindness, and he makes food taste good so that we should enjoy it. And it gives us a certain amount of enjoyment in life. It adds to the spice of life. We enjoy that. But why, at the end of the day, why are you eating? So what's the evidence that you're eating because you have a bigger purpose in life? If, when you're at your table, which would serve as an altar, you happen to speak words of Torah, because speaking Torah is evidence of the fact that you believe that there's a higher purpose in life. And that's why the Mishnah says, if you don't do that, then it is as if it is zivchei mesim. Now that's very extreme. You know, that's very extreme. Even for extremists, that's extreme. You know, that if you don't say a word of Torah to your table, it's as if you're serving idols. Why is that? So one of the commentators explains very interesting insight. That in the ancient pagan world, they believed that there was a separation between the physical and the spiritual. You can serve in the physical world and you can be in the spiritual world, but the two don't meet. In Judaism, we say the opposite. In Judaism, we say, that's why you see that in the Christian system, for example. Right, there's this idea of complete separation from the physical. Anything physical is inherently sinful. It's inherently sinful. If you're a holy man, you're completely separated from the physical, at least in theory. Right, at least until the media gets a hold of it in the United States and they chase you across the country. But in theory, or unless you get sent from one end of the country to the other, even in theory, you're a holy man and you're completely separated from it. In Torah, it doesn't work that way. To the contrary, we try to elevate the physical. We do not deny the human condition. We try to make use of the human condition in order to better serve a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So it's a very interesting, the idea of lechem. That's the word lechem means in Hebrew. Lechem is the most basic food. That's the most basic food we have is called lechem. What is the word lechem really related to? What does the word lechem mean? Anybody know? What word in Hebrew is lechem related? And again, lechem is bread. Bread is the most basic food. What's that? Cham is hot. Right? There is lechem, you know, if the bread is hot, it certainly tastes better, right? But where's the root? The word lechem itself comes from what word? Lochem. What does the word lochem mean? To raise is why is lochem? Leharim is to elevate. To fight. Milchama is a war. Lochem is a warrior. Lechem and lochem are the exact same letters. A warrior and bread. What does that mean? Why should lechem and lochem? Why is it? What's it got? What's bread got to do with war? The answer has got everything to do with war. Because most wars in the world, if bread is the symbol of basic material existence, wars are fought over material existence. So at a basic level, we're fighting over the bread, even though that's also in theory. In practice, wars are fought. Where wars could be fought for years, where people forget why it is that we're fighting this war. You know, I think in World War I there was a strip of real estate that the French and the Germans were fighting over a strip of land about 100 yards. I forgot what the place is called. Thousands and thousands and thousands of guys got killed there. They're slaughtered there over 100 yards of turf. Right, where you know, you couldn't advance because you're in those bunkers, and the minute you came out, you got shot, and then they brought in another. Right, it was ridiculous. Nobody even know what you're fighting for. It's senseless. But there are many wars where we are fighting for. Hey, listen, we're fighting over turf. Now you can be fighting a war between countries. You can fight a war between rival gangs. There's a turf war. You're taking some of our real estate. You're taking our material possessions. That's the first connection. The second connection is a little more relevant to us, which is that is the ultimate battle that you fight. You fight the battle of bread. You fight the battle of the physical drive, the lechem. You have to fight a constant battle that you conquer food. The food doesn't conquer you. That's a constant battle that we have all the time. It's the battle of food. Like all drives, it's a battle that we need to control it. We don't try to remove it totally. We don't deny the fact that we have to eat. We have to enjoy our eating, but not to allow the food to dominate us. Interestingly enough, there's one other physical drive that we have. We spoke about this morning also a little bit, besides money. Money's not purely a physical drive. Money's a very strong drive, probably the most powerful drive, but it's not a physical drive per se. Money is more of a drive for an intangible. You want to hold the cash, but it's not a physical satisfaction as much as either an ego satisfaction or an emotional satisfaction. The two physical drives that we have are the drive for the sexual drive and the food drive. Now, very interesting, in the Torah, where Mrs. Potiphar, you know, remember the story, Mrs. Potiphar starts up with Yosef. Story in the Torah, and Yosef manages to somehow overcome her advances, and he says to her at a certain point, listen, I can't do that, I can't betray my master. Potiphar has put me in charge of the home. He's given me everything. He's putting me in charge of everything. Then Yosef uses a very cryptic terminology. There's only one thing he's withheld. Remember what he says? Ki im es halechem asher hu ochel. The only thing that he has withheld from me is the bread that he eats. That's what it says in the Torah. Potiphar has only withheld from me the bread that he eats. And Rashi points out on the spot, Rashi points out that when Yosef uses bread in that context, bread is used as a euphemism for his wife. Right? The only thing he's withheld from me is you. And as in a euphemistic, Yosef says, the only thing he's withheld is the bread. Rashi says, last one, his wife. Right? That means we find bread represents one drive, the food drive in its literal sense. In the euphemistic sense, it represents the sexual drive. That's why it's called lechem, because that's man's battle. The battle in the physical realm is going to be in those two areas of life. And that's why, interestingly enough, you know, every holiday, Pesach is coming up. In the Beis HaMikdash, they brought sacrifices on Pesach. There's a prescribed sacrificial service. On Shavuos, there's a prescribed sacrificial service. On Sukkot, there's a prescribed sacrificial service. Do you know what the sacrifice was on Shavuos? Interesting, on Shavuos, the holiday the Torah was given, what is the sacrifice that we're given on Shavuot, that we bring on Shavuot? You know, there are two breads are brought to the Beis HaMikdash. You know what it's called? It's called the Shtei HaLechem. The Shtei HaLechem, the offering of two breads, which is brought on Shavuot. You follow now. I'm sure you've probably worked this out already. Why would you bring those two breads? The offering of two breads is brought on Shavuot, which is the holiday that celebrates the anniversary of the giving of the Torah. Do you understand why that is?
Because it's like a wedding, you know, we get married to the Torah, Shavuos.
Okay, there is an idea of that. What else? What benefit is there from the Torah? What is the benefit of having received the Torah, which people often overlook? The benefit of the Torah is that the Torah does not, the irony is, in a system with so many rules and so many restrictions, and everywhere you turn, don't. Usher, forbidden, right? Everywhere you are, right? At the end of the day, what does it do for your existence in this world? By teaching you to control yourself, what is it? It enhances your pleasure and your appreciation of this world. A person lives out of control. At a certain point, when you're out of control, you get to a point where you can almost, something becomes loathsome to you. Right? There are certain foods, I'm sure it's happened to you in your life, where one day you decide, you know, I'm just going to do this right. You know, I love apple pie so much, I'm just going to apple pie out right now. You know, and then you apple pie out, and you get to the point where I can't look at apple pie anymore. Right? It's become almost loathsome to you. And if you control yourself, then the more you control, then you gain, there's a certain appreciation, and with the appreciation comes a true enjoyment and pleasure of it. By receiving a Torah, what does the Torah teach us? It teaches us how to be able to live and enjoy all of the physical benefits that God has given us, the physical pleasures, without burning them out, without them turning to getting to a point where they're been overused and therefore burnt out completely. The way we acknowledge that on Shavuos is we bring an offering of two breads, because those two breads again correspond to those two areas of the physical existence, the areas that threaten more than any to dominate us, and the areas which we have an obligation, if we expect to enjoy this world, we have to get those areas under control. People who are out of control, you look around, you see people are out of control of those areas. At the end of the day, they're down the line, they end up often very, very frustrated and very unhappy. Hugh Hefner, who was never known for his moral standards, his high moral standards, he said recently, a guy told me to quote from Hugh Hefner, he really gave me the shivers when I heard it, that Hugh Hefner recently said he's got no pleasure left in life. The only thing he enjoys is soup. So Hugh Hefner said, right? I remember I heard that, it gave me such a jolt. Because, you know, you figure, well, listen, you live the life of Riley, you know, what could be better? You know, and all of a sudden, he's pathetic. All of a sudden, a person gets to the point where they're basically dead. Just that their life source hasn't left them yet, that's all. That they're the walking dead. Right? And therefore, the Torah says, and it comes to the control, these two areas called the Shtei Lechem, that's why the offering is brought unto us. Now, having said that, this is very important, because sometimes people get a little carried away with this. When you're at a table, and there's food at the table, so besides all the other things about eating, which are supposed to be representative of an altar, and all the ways you eat, your attitude towards food, you have to just keep it at, each person has to know what level they're at. You can't go to the table and pretend not to enjoy the food. Right? If you're there, enjoy it. Just keep it under control. And while you're at it, say a Dvar Torah. Now, the Dvar Torah at the table does not have to be a long, elaborate Dvar. All you have to say is a halacha. Some people have a custom, they learn a halacha at the table. They learn halacha in Lashon Hara, they learn halacha in the laws of brachas on food. Learn halacha at the table. That's good enough. There's only going with one sitting in a room. The only going with sitting in a room is some of his talmidim, his disciples, were sitting at another table. They were eating. And one of them said to the other one, oh, before we bench, we have to say a Dvar Torah at the table. To fulfill the halacha of saying a Dvar Torah. So there's only gone sitting at the next table. He said, well, you just fulfilled the halacha. Right? That right there is the halacha. Right? To say that, we have to say that. They learn halacha. That right there is the halacha. Okay. The next one. Mishnah. Rabbi Chanina ben Chachinai Omer. Rabbi Chanina ben Chachinai says, Haneor Balayla, one is awake at night. Damahalech Bader Chachidi, or one who is traveling alone, is walking the road alone, Umifana Libo Levatola, and he turns his heart to, how does he translate? To idleness. Hareza Mishchai Benafsho, he bears guilt for his soul. Now, what does that mean? Somebody is awake at night, somebody who's traveling on the road alone, and he turns to trivialities. He focuses his mind on trivialities. Hareza Mishchai Benafsho. What does that mean? So the idea is like this. We know that every time a person studies Torah, every word of Torah he studies a mitzvah. Studying Torah is no different than putting on tefillin. Somebody says to you, why do you study Torah? The answer to that is, why do you put on tefillin? Why put on tefillin? It's a mitzvah. Right. Studying Torah is a mitzvah. Right. Now, there's also instruction in Torah, and the Torah helps us to fight against the evil inclination, and Torah instructs us on what to do. We need to know the laws, because the laws are contained in Torah. But before you even get there, before you get to the point of, I will learn, it's an instruction book, realize that every time you learn a word of Torah, it is as if you've worn tzitzit, as if you put up a mezuzah, as if you brought a sacrifice, as if you put on tefillin. Every word of Torah itself represents a mitzvah. Now, if I would give you a money machine, let's say I gave you a money machine. We're all looking for a money machine. I have one. It's called my father-in-law. But we have. Oh, they have a money. I wish. I have a money. They have a money machine. right? Now, you have a money machine, and your money machine is, some people see that in their parents. You have a money machine. And now, I'm going to give you this money machine. The money machine is packed with $10 bills. I'm going to give you an hour. You can pull as many $10 bills out of the machine as you want, right? In an hour. Right? There's no limit. As many as you can pull as fast as you can. How do you think your hands are going to look like for that hour? Right? As fast as you can possibly pull them out, right? If I give you 24 hours, you keep it up for 20. And if you got tired, what do you think you would do? You'd rest one hand and keep pulling with the other one. Right? What do you think going to sleep would look like that night? Now you got 24 hours with this machine. What do you think would look like going to sleep? Going to sleep normally looks like, you know, well, it's a shower and a shave and elaborate preparations. You know, I got to make my bed just so and touch every corner of the bed. It's complete. You know, right? When you're pulling money out of a machine, you'd collapse like you do in front of a movie. You know, you just collapse, and as soon as you wake up, you just keep pulling money out of the machine. Right? The person realizes that life itself is really, it's not 24 hours. So 70 years. What's the difference? We've been put in this world to try to do as many mitzvahs as we can. And if learning Torah is a mitzvah, you wake up in the middle of the night, you got nothing to do in the middle of the night, you wake up, there's nothing to do. Right? So what if you really flip on the TV, watch an old movie? Right? You know, watch it, you know, wake up in the middle, you gotta do something. Something give you, open up a sefer. You study Torah, you're awake anyway. You're traveling alone. It's not like you're traveling with somebody who's jawing away at you. So you haven't even got the excuse that I'm traveling and somebody's got my ear, so I can't. You're traveling by yourself. Take a tape. There's plenty of Torah tapes available. You wake up in the middle of the night, open up a sefer. If nothing else, it'll put you back to sleep. And then you're hanging up, you know, open up a Gemara, next thing you know, you'll be fast asleep. Right? So open up the sefer. Like, but if you've got the opportunity, what would you say to somebody who's got a money machine in front of them? In the middle of the night, he wakes up, the money machine is there, and says, well, you know, I'll get to it tomorrow. And you're a lunatic. You take advantage of every moment. So, obviously, we can't run down our health. Right? We can't do anything extreme. But if we get the right attitude, a person finds those moments in life where, okay, I'm alone, there's nothing to do right now. Nothing, never nothing to do. There's always another. Say, well, you know all about shots. You know all the shots, right? You finish the whole thing. You know all about the gun. You know all about it, right? There's always another safer to learn. There's always more Torah to learn. There's always another mitzvah to do. Take it. That's what the mitzvah is. Okay, go ahead.
Put the machine on automatic.
Yeah, put the machine on automatic. Don't worry. And if it was not automatic, you would go back and sit and stand there
watching. It's all consistent with what I'm teaching him. No motorcycles, human bites.
There you go. Thank you.
Can we get a couple of this?